Brendo McCormack. Thanks for joining us, Brendo.
Pleasure. Tim, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for making the time. I appreciate it. I've been wanting to do a podcast with you for probably 5 years, so this is a long time coming.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, and same thing. We got to reciprocate it when Perth BPM Podcast starts doing its thing back in next year. So 2023, we'll make sure that we do a pod swap.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I remember asking you to be on your podcast like 3 years ago, and you bin me, you reject me, and I will not give up.
Did I actually?
Yeah, you fobbed me off. And I was like, I'm going to get him.
Nah, dude, that sounds so strange because I would have been keen for sure. I reckon, like, without going into the weeds early with this thing, there must have been something that happened at that time. Like, COVID kicked off, Fit of Fire kicked off, something happened that just detracted away from it, but we're definitely going to make it happen.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So if someone hasn't seen your bald head before and they don't know who you are, how would you introduce yourself? Like, what do you do? Who are you?
What do I do? Okay, cool. So yeah, it's funny. There's this whole new generation of people come in and I'm not as front of camera as I once was.
Yeah.
And people forget you really quickly. So a lot of the stuff I do is behind the scenes now. But most people know me as Brendo. So I think of it like Madonna. Whereas if you say Brendo within the industry and just that, then it's people are going to know who you are. I strategically did that because I couldn't get the name BrendanMcCormack.com, but I could get Brendo. So I was like, fuck, that's it. I'm Brendo. And everyone just calls me Brendo. So I started in the industry 20 years ago, next year. We'll go into that a little bit further. I've done a whole bunch of stuff within the industry. I first wanted to just sell protein. That was my goal in life, to sell protein. I thought that people who worked at supplement stores were the best people in the world. So I did that. I've spent time as a rep. I got into media, which is Perth Fit Fam. So most, I guess that's where people really started to know me as. I had a network before that, but that really sort of got me out there into the public eye a lot more. And then from there, I've created multiple businesses. So Fitify, a dating app for fitness people, for fitness enthusiasts, which I sold my shares in. And if you're a fitness business in Perth, at some stage, I've had an impact in your business.
Yeah. You'd be marketing to them on Facebook ads or somehow.
Yeah, either that or there's like 1 degree of separation with a business that I've had an impact with. So something that I've done in the industry has impacted that specific business if it's in Perth.
Yeah. I was speaking to Steph before the podcast and we were obviously reviewing the questions that we had for it. And one of the things we like most respect is how much hustle you've got and how many things you've done and how successful you've been in a lot of things. So congrats on that. Yeah, it takes a fair person to do that. So I know that you've basically done everything in the fitness industry, like training wise. I think you're a vegan, you did bodybuilding, you know, you're an Olympic weightlifter. Like, how did it start in the fitness industry? Like, what was the first steps? Like, where were you training? How'd that all work?
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up playing baseball and I grew up playing guitar. So there was two things and I was equally at the same level in each one. So I played state level baseball, which is actually how I ended up in Perth because I grew up in Canberra, came here for the Nationals 1 year. And if you come from Canberra and then you see Perth and you got these amazing beaches, this great weather, the city, like I was just blown away by. And I was like, okay, I'm going to live there one day. So that's how I actually ended up in Perth. But guitar and baseball. So when I was 16, I was really skinny. I was 55 kilos and vegetarian, actually. And I had this sort of mentor who was sort of like a bigger brother back then. And he was this jacked dude who was my supervisor at Woolies. But he sort of just took me under his wing in life. And I really looked up to him. And one time he was like, hey, man, do you want to come to the gym with me? And of course, you know, I just wanted to be this dude. So I was like, yeah, I went to the gym. And I specifically remember the first exercise I did was bench press, which is pretty common. And I had 2.5 kilos aside and I'm struggling to like bench out this 2.5 kilos or this whatever that would be, 25 kilos. But it was literally like that one first time that I was just hooked. And I was like, oh, this is me. Like, this is my jam. And I sold all my guitar stuff within like a month. I was just like, okay, I'm going to burn that. And I'm just going to, I'm a gym dude now. And I had to go through this weird decision because I was vegetarian and there wasn't all the vegan stuff now like there, like, well, there wasn't all the vegan stuff and options like there is now. And it was just, hey, if you don't eat meat, you're not going to get protein, you're not going to grow muscle is all I was told. So I was like, at this dilemma, and I'm like, that's it, I'm getting yoked. And so I stopped being vegetarian when I was 16. So I was 3 years being veggie, and that's sort of what started my journey in getting into fitness. It was just because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be like that guy, and I really looked up to him. And which is awesome because he was from Canberra too. He doesn't live there now, but we're both going back for Christmas this year. So we spoke the other day on the phone, and yeah, we're going to reconnect after all these years, which is awesome.
Epic. Yeah, mine was pretty similar. I was working in a supplement store in Surge Clarkson, and this little supplement store in the corner, and this guy, Nick, was like, do you want to be my training partner? And I said, fuck it, like, why not? And he was this bodybuilding guy. So essentially, we were training 6 days a week, like, hard as fuck. I think that was probably the hardest I ever trained, was in that first period of training. This dude pushed me. I think I gained like 10 kilos in 18 months, like that first like newbie gain phase. Got absolutely massive. Well, for me, massive. I wasn't like a twig anymore. So I went from like 65, probably to 75 kilos. Thought I was absolutely huge. And then the rest is history. But it's funny how like you start, supplements is like the ultimate job for you when you first get into the fitness industry. Like, I'm going to get cheap protein.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, yeah. Go.
Just on that, sorry to cut you off, because it's like, this is held backwards. How did you work at a supplement store before you started training?
Dude, so, well, I was training, but I had no idea what I was doing, like everyone in the fitness industry. Okay. So I was like 18 training, but, you know, like, it was kind of just, everything was backwards. I was a PT at Surge, no idea what I was doing. Like, one of those struggling personal trainers, you know, paying $300 a week and just getting nowhere with anything.
It's the just most so people know the context of this, you and I knew each other back then.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was probably a while ago. It was 13 years ago or something like that. Anyway, it was crazy. And then I've seen the rise of Perth Fit Fam, which was pretty interesting to me back in the day. And I know Perth Fit Fam has taken many evolutions. And I think the latest project is becoming the fittest city in the world, which I saw and I loved. Can you explain like what the passion is to becoming the, well, you helping us become the fittest city in the world and what it's all about?
Yeah, let's spend a bit of time delving into this one, and I'll try and take people through a bit of a story with it. So when Perth Fit Fam kicked off, initially, I had this big network of people. I've been a rep for years, and I got to see so much cool stuff within the fitness industry, and whether that was from a bodybuilding, a CrossFit, a powerlifting, all the different gyms, like your F45s, and even like, you know, your Jungle Bodies, which was this Perth-based dance community. And I was like, man, unless you're from these spaces, you probably think, oh yeah, there's like a couple of hundred people that probably do this. But whenever you jump into the niche, there's thousands of people, there's personalities, there's politics, there's apparel, there's lingo. It's like there's so much culture within all of these niches. And I was like, man, I just want to showcase all the cool stuff that's in the scene. And that's sort of how it started. And it was really like the way that we did content and interviews and being episodic and then doing the podcasts. And it just created this way of connecting the Perth fitness scene, which is what I always said. And gave the vibe in Perth that, you know, it was a bigger community who was more so connected. Whereas if you go anywhere else, and the feedback I get from people who come over here, it's like, oh man, it just seems like the industry is so much more connected than what we have over here, where everyone's sort of just in their little holes. Part of that, I think, is to do with the size of Perth, because I always say it's big enough to make an impact, but not so big that you get lost in the crowd. Whereas in Sydney, you know, there's a lot more going on. It'd be much harder to break through. But at the same time, I think it was just the innovation of what we did and the attention that it got and how fast it grew back then. I also think that Perth Fit Fam led the way in that we connecting the community together. So from a culture impact, I think like that was really revolutionary from there. Now, obviously, there were things that happened within the midst of that. You know, I found a Fitify, which was the dating app that took a lot of my focus, you know, raised funding and, you know, had investors and whatnot. And I was like, okay, I really have a passion for, you know, Perth and the fitness industry and, you know, the things that I'd done and the opportunities I had. But at the same time, it was like, okay, now this is a project that I need to put all my efforts into. So Perth Fit Fam went on ice for a couple of years, and then I ventured off and did that. And now I'll like sort of circle back to, you know, making Perth the fittest city in the world and I guess the evolution in this time. And we spoke off camera about how you change over the years in the industry. So we both started off as bros, like, hey, we're skinny dudes. We just want to get big and, you know, drink protein. And then we both sort of ventured into more of a functional sort of training and, you know, whether you're doing CrossFit sort of style or you're doing Olympic weightlifting, there's different sort of things that you venture out there where it goes from being less about aesthetics and then more about athletics. And then now I'm sort of at an age where I'm not so concerned about that, but it's more so longevity. And hey, what does this fitness endeavor actually do for me health-wise, longevity-wise? Obviously, I want to feel good and I want to live a long, healthy life. So that's my personal journey. And I think most people go through a similar sort of journey as they go through the years. From making the fittest city in the world and the passion from that, obviously I love Perth as a city. It's my favorite city and we're lucky that we get to live here. And I love the fitness industry and have a wealth of experience through that. The way I got to this point was I've grown up in the fitness industry and I'm surrounded by gym people all day. People like you, my wife, we met from the industry, all my close friends. I'm in a gym all the time. So my lens of the world was that, hey, it's not like early 2000s where there was no CrossFit, there was no 24/7 gyms, there was only, you know, some big box gyms around and no one knew about protein or nutrition. And, you know, back then, if you trained and took protein, you were definitely the fittest person within the community. And in saying that, Canberra wasn't a big place, but me and my mates, we definitely stood out in Canberra back then. So, yeah, I'm like, okay, it's not like the early 2000s. Everyone knows about fitness. Everyone has a gym membership. There's gyms on every single corner. But then when I actually looked into the data, which I came across, and I've got some numbers and stuff now, is it still such a small percentage of the population that do physical activity? So less than 18% of the population actually go to a gym. And then the question of that is, because, you know, you and I sort of know data of gyms. If you're a community-based gym, you probably have about a 90 to 90, when I say community, I'd say boutique or smaller group fitness sort of gym, you probably have about a 90 to 95 active member rate. If you're a bigger box gym, you probably have about 20 to 30%. So of that number, how many of those actually equate to that 18%? And then on the flip side, if you want to like delve even deeper, what do you equate to an active member? Is that they're coming three times a week, or is that on your database that they're coming once a month and so they're considered less likely to cancel that membership, which is that sort of sleeper model? So I'm like, man, this is crazy. I can't believe that so many people don't do physical activity, don't take care of their health and fitness, because I've never met someone who made a life change, got fitter, felt better about themselves, looked better, going to live a longer life, and then went, fuck, I really regret that. Like, I've never seen that. It's impossible. I don't know if anyone can give me an example of anyone doing that. And so the passion, I guess my passion for the industry has changed, where I'm like, hey, as an industry, we do something amazing. And I don't think that we get credit for it. The government sees us still as recreation. They don't see us as health. And partly it is recreation, but partly it's also health. They're not exclusive. They still see us as people taking photos in mirrors, wearing stringer tees, trying to look good for a festival. And to the point that if you go to LinkedIn and you go to put in your industry, or if you do signing up on a form and they select industry, we're other. We're not like an industry that people look at serious enough. Yeah, that's right. We're sort of like that other industry. Now, the impact that we have is every single person who is inactive, physically inactive, costs the government on average $2,500 per year. Now, that's like over 80% of the population. It equates to $1.5 billion in healthcare costs per year, which are preventable by people just doing physical activity. And for me, that's crazy. So I'll come back specifically to Perth. So even knowing this and not really getting support or recognition from the government, even to the point where in COVID, we weren't recognized as an essential service. That will flip around now. In Queensland, it's already flipped around, but that's definitely going to change over time. But if we can showcase the return of investment for the government to invest in our industry, not only does it get people fitter, gets people more active, it closes that gap, but it helps businesses as well. If we're getting that support, and whether that's from cash, whether we're talking subsidies here, whether we're just talking about awareness, whether we're talking about partnerships, there's mutual benefit, and it will save the government what was projected. I think it was not Murdoch Uni, it wasn't here. It was a university actually over East, because it's a report which I've actually got from AusActive, who I've been doing a bit of collaboration with. The return on investment would be about 3.1 times for the government to do it. The issue with it is your election cycles running 4 years. To see a return on this, it's going to be our generation. So it's going to be impacting our generation, get active, because it's about a 20-year turnaround until, okay, how many of people who were born in the 1980s, let's say, I think you might be on the cusp, you might be in
91.
Okay, so, but within that sort of range, how many of those people can we impact, which is going to save us on those healthcare costs within the future? And then who's going to have the guts to say, hey, I am only going to be in a four-year swing, so I'm going to put in Band-Aids as opposed to actually creating a long-term preventable solution. And this is the challenges that we're going to face. So when I look at that stuff, and again, my progression in the industry is different. Some people are concerned about, looking good. I'm sort of looking at a very high-level view of the industry and how can we make that impact. So I think part of the question was, that obviously should showcase my passion for that.
Yeah.
I could talk about this on a national level. My city's Perth, and that's what I'm passionate about, is we can make an impact in Perth, and I believe that we have a platform and resources and knowledge to be able to do that. So from us as an actual business, and I guess this is the lessons that I learned through going through a startup process, going through the build. So if you look at someone from a funnel process, or if you look at a customer journey from a funnel process, you essentially have like awareness. It's called Pirate Metrics, if someone wants to look it up. And it's AAARR, so Pirate like R, which is pretty lame. But it's essentially you start off with awareness. So somebody is either aware or they're just completely unaware. And one of the biggest problems that we face is that the broader population just literally aren't aware of what we do, the fitness industry. They think it's only for jacked up people who have an ego. That's an awareness problem to overcome. So establishing that is key. Then you've got acquisition, which would essentially be getting the lead. Then you got activation, which would be those people, let's say, for instance, activating their trial. Then you got revenue, which is that person becoming a paying member. Then you got referral, which is how many people does that person tell their friends? Word of mouth, still massive. And then retention, which is a big issue with some gyms or businesses, but there's always a churn rate built within that business. Yeah. So if I look at Perfect Fam and what success or like the outcome that we want to achieve of it, first of all, we want to really work on that top level part of it, essentially the A components of the funnel for the broader population. So we're a media business. We are known for our content. Our reach our reach, especially when we partner with people, is amazing. It helps out. So how can we tell a story over a period of time to showcase not only what's happening in the industry, but to inspire people to get involved with something that they love? Because I think that there's something for everyone. It doesn't need to be slinging barbells or dumbbells. There's something of physical activity, I think that everyone can go, hey, that's for me. And our job is to be able to showcase that and inspire people to be able to do that. From a platform standpoint, because you've got to have a Northern Star, like you've got to have that, hey, what's that key metric that is most important for us? And ours also works through a funnel process. So we have perfectfam.com.au, which is where our content is held on and our database of gyms and whatnot. So for me, obviously, there's traffic, which isn't really, it's a bit of a vanity metric, but it does show a level of success that people are coming through. But then you got listing views. So how many people are actually going from coming to the website to then exploring a business? And what's that percentage? So what's the intent of people actually coming in? But the final one, is how many people make an inquiry within a business. So we're essentially building out the awareness, getting people interested, somehow targeting them, whether it's through organic, whether it's through paid, whether it's through part of our web content and it's an interest piece and somebody search for it and they sort of funnel through that journey. But how many of those people become an inquiry? So the fittest countries in the world, if you want to like edge in, I'm sort of like going through. If you need to edge in, let me know.
I got a few questions. I'll jump in a minute.
Okay, the two fittest countries in the world at the moment from what I've seen is Sweden and Norway. And their percentages of people that train at a fitness facility, so, you know, gym studio, something along the lines of that, it's still only 22. It's not that big of a gap. Australia, it's actually less than 18. We're fitter, so it's probably around about the 17 mark. So it's like that 5% gap. So for us to be able to become, let's say, the fittest city in the world and reach that 22, it works out to be about 100,000 people who don't currently train, who then go, hey, man, I saw that thing and that inspired me and I want to take up health and fitness. So it's actually, there's actually like a concrete number to get that level of success. Yeah, I'll let you jump in here. There's probably one more thing that to touch on with context, which is called the GAPA agreement, which the government signed. And just to give, I assume like people who listen to this are probably industry people as well as fitness enthusiasts. And I don't think anyone I've met has ever heard of the GAPA agreement.
No, I definitely haven't. So I wanted to ask you, which I'll answer first. What do you think the 82% doing or not doing and the reasons why they are not training? Would be pretty interested to know. So I personally think a lot of it is like a fear. Like, I think there's a fear of like, hey, I've got these images in my head of a personal trainer whipping me, like a trainer, like screaming at me saying like, fucking get it, like more reps, like burpees. It's going to be pain. It's going to be punishment. It's going to be hard. I feel like a lot of people have that image of like physical fitness, wherever that's come from in the mass media. I think another part of it is just a general like lack of education, and that kind of stems from the top. There is a huge lack of education in health of like how important physical activity and nutrition is. And I think like those two things are keeping a lot of people away from even engaging. Most people don't even think about like, I need fitness until there's a fucking big problem with their health. And when they have a big problem with their health, then maybe they start researching and being like, maybe I need to go for more walks. Maybe I need to get a personal trainer. Maybe I need to get a meal plan. Maybe I need to start eating better. But until they have that like big health scare, I don't think it becomes like super prevalent or relevant for them. Maybe you can give me your opinion on why the 82% aren't doing anything.
Yeah, I think it stems from that top of funnel, like I mentioned. I reckon that people are caught in the hamster wheel of life. And if you're not a fitness person, then you're unaware. And what you said is true. So it is actually like awareness, education, understanding, definitely intimidation. How many times have we heard, I want to get fitter before I go to the gym?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, crazy.
Like, it's nuts. I thought that. I was like, oh, like I did that gym, did the bench, it's for me. And I'm like, I didn't want to go to a big gym and I wanted to train at a little private country club, which was up the road from me back then, because I wanted to bulk up before I walked into the gym. And that's like a young dude. So many people have that same thing of intimidation. I think that there's two prongs with what you said about the mass media and the fitness and the whipping. So I'll delve back into like the algorithm a little bit. So if we're publishing content, right, we're doing fitness content and we try to be wary because you can get caught into the elite side of it really quick when we push out content, because we know that there's certain things that are going to get more interaction and more reach. The issue is if you do that and it wins on, let's say, Instagram, it's going to hit fitness people. So it's like, I tell everyone, hey, man, if you think you're going to do that booty stuff and whatnot, whatever that is, and you think that you're going to inspire the masses, you're literally getting played by the algorithm and that's going to get pushed through to people that already have an interest. So misconception, but also awareness. If we look at Biggest Loser, I want to know what the impact that having a mainstream show, which was fitness-based, whether it was right or not, is another question, but getting pushed through a mass channel to the general population. Because I think that there's different partnerships that need to happen, which don't circulate around industry and algorithm, and there's different channels that it needs to come through for it to actually make an impact. So you might be, you were born in Germany, were you?
No, Australia. My family's just German, both parents.
Okay, I'm not sure. You might be at the gap where you might be a little bit too young, or I'm not sure if it was around, but do you ever remember the Life Be In It campaign that used to be on Australia? Okay, so back when I was young.
Awful like you.
Yeah, so
back you're showing back your age.
Because, yeah, for sure, which it happens a lot more now, for sure, yeah. Even the greys popping up. So when I was young, there was this thing called the Life Be In It, and it was always these ads that got played, these cartoony ads, but it was basically inspiring, you know, the broader population that was all through mainstream to be physically active. And there's actually a key point within the percentage of people who are physically active which correlate with that campaign, and that's the highest bump that we've ever seen in a percentage. And the crazy thing is, it's never been done ever since then. So this is where communication comes in, and you got to work out, okay, well, can we be self-sufficient with this, or do you need government support to be able to do this, which is tricky. But obviously that makes the process a bit easier if you can get through the red tape to make that happen. So I'll come back to the GAPA agreement, because it's probably a good time. Otherwise, we'll segment out of it. So the GAPA agreement, it's a worldwide initiative by WHO. And I know even that is a trigger subject in 2022. But it was signed by multiple countries in 2018. And the purpose of it is they want to get more people, more active people for a healthier world by 2030. And I believe that the jump is 10%. So it's not huge. It's sort of like, you know, I said going from like 17% to that 22%. It's somewhat, it might be 15%, the jump, but it's somewhat within the vicinity of there to get 15% of people more active by 2030. And there's four key steps without delving into it too much. But I'll jump through them now. So objective one is create active societies. So the four policy action are proposed to aim to create positive social norms and attitudes and a paradigm shift in society by enhancing the knowledge and undertaking of and appreciation for the multiple benefits of regular physical exercise according to all abilities and ages. Literally what we just spoke about, right? It's education and getting people more aware and understanding of physical activity. So that's point one. Point number two, create active environments. A five policy action that addresses the need to create supportive spaces and places that promote the safeguard and rights of all people of all ages and abilities to have equitable access to safe places and spaces in their cities, where they can engage in physical activity. So that's more from a council planning standpoint. We might have people within our industry that advise on that, but that's more so how they're doing developments with safe places, getting people to be able to commute and to be fitter outdoors and that sort of stuff, which is also another topic, is commute and the impact of COVID and working from home and a 20% drop in physically active people through that period. Point number three is create active people. So six policy action, which outlines multiple settings in which an increase in programs and opportunities can help people of all ages and abilities engage in regular physical activities as individuals, families, and communities. So creating more different programs for everyone. I don't know where that's going to come from, because the government's not going to do that. That's going to come from an internal industry and like an innovation. And we can definitely delve into that if we don't have a time cap of where those opportunities are. And create active systems. So five policy action to outline investments needed to increase the systems necessary to implement effective and coordinate international, national and subnational action to increase physical activity and reduce sedentary behaviour. These action accepts governments, leadership, multisectoral partnerships, workforce capabilities, which is massive, advocacy, information systems and financing mechanisms across all relevant sectors. So what I take out of that is, and why people don't exercise, and I've got a kid now, so I sort of get it a little bit more. You get caught into that hamster wheel of life, and it's like, and obviously everyone can have an excuse, and the easy thing to say is, oh, well, they're just making an excuse. But if you look at the time, the commute to work and all of that, how do we increase corporate engagement? Like, how do you get people to do a minimum level of activity whilst they're at work? as well. Like, what opportunities are that? So I think that you've got those combinations. So that's all awesome, right? And having that plan and signing up to that plan is all awesome. The issue with this is zero efforts being put towards it.
Well, I think the only one I was going to say is number two. I think councils definitely are making spaces to engage in physical activity. That's the only one that you went through there out of the four, which I thought they're actually doing. Other than that, yeah. maybe we're in an echo chamber and we don't see it, but yeah, I can't see fuck all being done on the other three.
Yeah, I could tell you nothing's been done because I was at the Aus Active Leaders Summit. It was in Sydney maybe 2 months ago now, maybe a little bit less. And this is something that's been brought up and I've had this personal dialogue with them as well. And they've outright told me nothing's been done. We've signed up for this thing. It's all good. Let's get behind it. They're the governing body. They're doing good work now. Whereas before when it was Fitness Australia, I would say it was completely irrelevant. I think that anyone in the industry could agree with that. But now I'm actually seeing what they're doing behind the scenes. And I'm like, okay, there's value to this. But how do we actually push this forward? Because you're in negotiation, you're in negotiation trying to get this support. Hey, we're here to support you. What can we do to be able to facilitate this stuff to happen? And 4-year election cycle, it's like, okay, new government, you've got to start this process again. You've got to start this process again.
Well, the Nordic countries have a different governance system, don't they? I think Sweden and Norway, they have like shared prime minister roles and it's like a lot longer term. So maybe they don't have this much political pressure to execute something in 4 years than we would. So maybe they're pushing it like the physical fitness initiatives like further, faster compared to us.
Yeah. I'd like to know. It's funny because you have UK Active, who's the governing body over there, and they dialed in and they spoke about a national fitness day, so like UK fitness day. And one of the questions was, oh, how did you get the government to do that? And they said, well, we didn't. We just did it ourselves. Like it became this whole PR campaign, this activation, getting people to be active for this day. It's building that awareness. But they're like, no, we self-funded it. Like, and if you can do that, and for us as Perth Fit Fam, so if this brings, like if this kind of also wraps up, okay, what's success? Like what's the objective? If we can create these, if we can create like PR campaigns to reach the broader public, to have partnerships throughout WA, and there's a bit of infrastructure to make this happen, but we're not relying on getting the green light from the government and the process that's involved in that, that's success for me. Is okay, not just using our channel, but maybe using networks and maybe using, and it's not a solo project. It's going to take people, not just me. It's going to take, you know, industry leaders like you. And, you know, there's probably hundreds of them. Possibly hundreds of them who have that experience and the networks and that insight to be able to make things like this happen. I think it's a collaborative effort for sure.
Let's do it. Put a date on it.
That's what tickles my
pickle. Let's
go. Yeah, I think that we do. I think that then we get a community of people who are educated within the space, who have a vision of, hey, we can make people more active and then actually lead the way in being able to do that.
Yeah, I wanted to backtrack just from there. We've gone deep into government policy, and I just wanted to get some higher, like some surface level stuff. So, you know, we did mention Biggest Loser, and Biggest Loser is probably like the biggest positive or negative advertising campaign for health and fitness that's been rolled around in the mainstream media. I wanted to give my take on Biggest Loser, and I wanted to get your take on it as well. I think Biggest Loser was great for like a general education of, you know, what it could look like to get results. I think it's completely unsustainable, like the way they did it. I think the big thing we didn't see was the after of Biggest Loser. So there was like a lot of people that lost 60 kilos and then gained 60 kilos straight back after. I don't think 1200 calorie diets and training 8 hours a day with a personal trainer is completely sustainable. So I think there has to be, it's not sexy at all, but like a bit more sustainable approach. And if they were going to do it again, it has to be sustainable. I'd love to get your take on it.
Yeah, what you said is exactly right. So I know two of the former contestants and I know the weight gain that came afterwards and everything that came afterwards. It's 100% what happens. Mm. I agree with that 100%. I agree that I've been on a reality TV show, so I know how they film it and how you got to build those stories. And it's all about, like, you know, sucking people in through the other side as they're watching it and buying into the drama of it all. And I 100% agree with what you said, is if we did this sustainable and, you know, it's not sexy, like it doesn't sell. There's got to be other ways to do it, but there's got to be different channels outside of basic social media, even Google, right? Google, if you're ranking on Google and you know, you're getting people on search terms who aren't within the industry, but they're coming in to get some information, it's not like you're disturbing them, or it's not like they're already aware and they know what's going on. They might be prompted, but then they're coming through a different funnel. So we have that channel as well. But even to get somebody to that point, it doesn't mean that it's like it had to have been top of mind. There had to have been a trigger to get someone to go, hey, I want to make a lifestyle change. Let's just say it as broad as that. I want to make a change, and then put in a search term. How do you inspire people to get to that point? And I think that's the trick, is like, how do you use channels outside of your own, whether it's partnerships, whether it's people outside of the space that are doing their journey, you know, whether you did go big and it was a reality show, but it really showcased in a lot of people doing things the right way. I don't think that would sell. I think even trying to get that across the board is like such a big endeavor that it's probably not worth doing. But I think there's better ways on a local level for us to be able to utilize people who are not influencers, but influential within sectors outside of what we do, and to be able to tell their story of change, which will then inspire people outside. I think that's probably the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, cool. To summarize this component, what we just chatted about, what would be your top three ways to get the 82% of people training more or doing more physical activity?
Doing more physical activity, I would say a statewide PR campaign. So I already sort of touched on it, so I'll just reiterate it. Statewide PR campaign, whether it's with government support or not, or self-funded. I would say utilizing people outside of the fitness realm. So first person that comes to mind randomly, let's say Basil Zemplis, people know him, but they're not necessarily fitness people. If you're getting people like that discussing their fitness journey, then I think that would create things top of mind. The third thing I would say from an internal industry level is helping gym owners become better marketers, or helping them generate, you know, more clients.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Directly doing it.
Yeah, I love those points as well. Top three ways to get people more active. I would say like some kind of corporate like incentive from the government would be cool. Yeah. Secondly, I think like people are motivated by the carrot or the stick. So we need to put, like, depending on the person, the carrot or the stick in front of them. So it has to be some kind of incentive for them to do it, like personally, or a stick.
Yeah.
So sometimes when we set goals, like with our own clients, I even find like you've got to give them the two options. Like, and be like, what's going to motivate you more? Like, you know, buy yourself a new dress or 1,000 calories on the Echo bike if you do not achieve this goal. And then usually the person is going to say, all right, cool, I fucking do not want to do 1,000 calories on the Echo bike rather than buy myself a dress. So I'm going to do that. So yeah, I'd say,
I love that two-prong approach, hey?
Yeah, it's a different way of doing things, but you know, it's, people are motivated by different shit. And I think like the third way probably would be, I don't even know if there was like a mass, like follow these people on social media method and they're going to be inspiring. So we can get like a list of like the top 100 accounts to follow to be inspired. Cause when I've like the best thing about social media is inspiration. And like, I like following people that are doing shit. And like, you're one of those people that's doing stuff. And when I see other people doing stuff, I'm like, I need to do more stuff because I'm being lazy. And that's like, that's what motivates me mentally and internally.
You know how you could do this? So just to wrap this up, because I really like those points. And by the way, this is why collaboration is super important, and it's not a one-person job to be able to do it because people have different perspectives. You kind of come halfway, right? So I like the idea of like the people and getting those inspired. So why not, as an industry level, and we can facilitate the content or the media side of it, but we're not trainers, and I'm not going to put someone, but we can partner with trainers like you to get these people to go through their journeys and document it, which gets pushed out across their platforms as well. Yeah. And let's say you get 10 to 20 of these people and they're going through their experiences. We get to tell a story, which is great. The gyms get the exposure off it, or the trainers get the exposure off it. And then it's a three-way approach, because then these people are pushing this out to people who aren't necessarily in it, and then that inspires them to do it. It's minimal cost. You're utilizing everyone's resources to be able to do it, and you're not relying on any red tape for that to happen.
100%. I just thought, like, what's like the biggest, like the fastest expanding medium at the moment? It's like Netflix, Stan, Amazon Prime, like all those video streamers. What if we could get like a documentary on them, on showing the journey? I think that would inspire a lot of people, but we'd need to get them to watch it. That's the other part. So the next question I wanted to go down, I couldn't think of anyone better probably to answer this question, because you're so deep in the fitness industry. And the question is, like, where do you see it going in the next 5 years? Like, where do you see it evolving, de-evolving? What do you think is going to boom? What do you not think is going to go well? Like, where, basically, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, so it's funny because, I get asked this question a bit, especially in this sort of environment, and I don't think that there's going to be the next F45. Like, let's, 24/7 gyms revolutionized things for back then. And then B-box gyms pivoted and then they offered 24/7. Then you had, let's say, CrossFit came into the market. And then that opened a door for gyms like Helix, where you don't necessarily need to be CrossFit, but it's the same model of it's a community-based gym in a small group environment. F45, obviously, as a franchise, came off the back of that. And now there's probably, I think that the actual number is 50 or 52 franchises in that model that are registered in Australia. But let's use big four is F45, Fitstop, BFT, and I'm sure I'm missing another one. But let's just say those three.
Maybe? Yeah.
I think they're almost defunct in Australia now. I just don't think it was a model that worked out well. They got dropped by Collective Wellness, who was the master franchisor, so I don't think that was successful, but let's say those. But there's all that sort of stuff popping up all the time. Then you got like the S30, who's Perth. By the way, love seeing Perth. People do epic stuff, and Luke and the team have killed it with S30. I know that they're going to have international expansion with the kind of nightclub sort of feeling gyms. I think that's awesome. I think that big boxes have, if we look at ebbs and flows, I think that 24/7s changed, big boxes adapted to that. They started offering 24/7 as a standard. I think that the biggest shift previously was that boutique wave that came in, and it was that small group training. And I think that big box gyms didn't have an answer for that, not in a really good way. But what I see now is big box gyms are starting to refine their offering and their services, and you're getting a lot more value for what you would have got. So recovery, like well done Pilates within it, like Good Life's gone through all these refurbs. And I'm like, okay, cool. Big box gyms are now sort of in that innovation stage where they're offering a lot of value for a broader amount of people. And then you've got all like the different combat stuff and whatnot, which is in its own sort of evolution. And the growth of BJJ, that sort of stuff, but it doesn't really relate to gym fitness industry very much. As far as what I think is going to change in the next 4 years, I don't think that there's going to be a massive shift within the bricks and mortar business part. We know that wearables has its own innovations. We're both Whoop people. So you had a whole wave of wearables coming through. You had a whole wave of apps coming through. So Sweat App was sold for $700 million by an Australian, young guy, Australian, $700 million, owned it outright, no investment, absolutely casual. Wild.
Yeah,
just crazy. And if someone said to me, what's like the opportunity within the gym space, I don't think that, I don't have that. I did years ago. I actually don't know what that opportunity is for a gym or what that future is going to be, except for providing more value and more offerings within your gym space, maximizing out your square meterage. So if I was to do it, I'd have a sick recovery zone. I'd be looking at longevity more within the space. I would have personalized offerings within the space, and I would be trying to maximize out my square meterage in a well thought out way. So the vibe and the environment was amazing, and also had the opportunity to increase my average customer value while still providing that service at the same time and whilst maintaining retention. I don't foresee anyone knocking the socks off innovation anytime soon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, on that point, we just spent $15,000 on our recovery area at Helix. So we got an Odin ice bath, new sauna. Completely redid the area. So, they actually just messaged me today. They were like, we just shipped your ice bath. I was like, let's fucking go. 23rd of December coming. So, yeah, I'm pumped for that. But,
if I did it, I would do the same thing. I would go to Odin. I would want that luxe experience for people to come into. And I just it's that whole package.
100%. Yeah, we did that. Like, we got an eVault scanner. People can use that, you know, out of specialty classes 24/7, all the types of things that, like, are extras in the fitness industry to make it a more valuable gym membership. I think a lot of gym owners are missing the boat on this. Like, personally, I think it's not that much money to add in lots of value for the longevity.
Just on that, you spoke about Helix. What do you think are the innovations that, like, where do you think the industry is going to be in like 3 to 4 years? And I might have answered that incorrectly, but yeah, the innovations, where do you think you're going to see changes?
I personally think gym owners need to stop copying each other. Like, I think it's a big problem. Like, one gym owner gets a new piece of equipment, the other one buys the exact same piece of equipment. And I feel like it's not true innovation coming from that angle. Personally, where I'm taking it is like the science route. So we're going hard on velocity training. So I don't know if you're familiar with it. I'll go through it as if you're not. But velocity training. Yeah. So speed of the bar will dictate the intent of your lift.
Do you use the measurements?
Yeah.
Do you use those little cables?
Yeah. Cool. So we've got 4 racks getting hooked up at the gym with iPads, and then the bar speed will be tracked. So the beauty of it is if you've got 3 athletes and you're all squatting and you're all squatting the same amount, you get a bar speed. And then the next person goes and he says, I want you to beat his bar speed. And then it becomes a competition on the rack on the speed. And you're probably like, that doesn't fucking matter. Or you're either on the other side where you're like, I'd like to be in that competition as well. So you're either like, you don't care or you do care. But if you do care, it's pretty exciting because like studies have shown over like a 12-week block, you can get like 5 to 15% more gain on like a regular, just like nothing else has changed. So that's kind of like our next level innovation personally on what we're doing. I think like more science has to come into the industry because like currently it's like everyone's doing basically the same program in every gym. And I think like a one size fits all approach is good, but I think there has to be some variation in it as well for each individual. So I think like individualization is coming. I think people are going away, especially what I've seen in the industry, people are going away from big classes. And I think small group is becoming more popular, and even one-on-one has made a resurgence in the fitness industry. You can let me know.
Yeah, for sure. So even financially on that, and some people who listen to this might know Alex Hormozi. They might know him as, you know, the new Gary Vee, or they might know him as Gym Launch. So I'll talk for him from Gym Launch. So he has this business model, it helped out so many gym owners, but I was just reviewing some of it the other day, and it was these different levels back then. So you've got your group fitness, which is like your 16s, but then you've got your higher end, which is like your 4, and then your personal training, which is like your one-on-ones. And I don't see a lot of gyms utilize that option, which could be really effective in increasing not only the personalization of the service for those who want it, but then the value of that member for those who want it as well, which is probably also going to increase retention because they're getting a more personalized service instead of just being, you know, just one of them. So I think that's an option too. There's always two markets which never get addressed properly. And it's definitely a blue ocean, which I don't think that anyone is really factoring in for. But how it gets delivered, I don't think that anyone's going to innovate for within our industry. And that's younger, so teens, and older. So older, let's say 60 plus or 65 plus or whatever that age bracket is. One issue with the 65 plus, and this is brutal, but they're definitely at a later stage, and investing in that, you know, from a gym owner, let's say like Helix, you're probably not going to invest in that. It's not your model.
Not my passion.
F45, no, not your passion. F45, and, you know, square peg, square hole. You can't be everything for all people. F45 tried doing something years ago where they addressed the two markets. From an outside perspective, I was like, oh, genius, this is great. From a business perspective, great, because if it works, it means that they've got their standard class times, but then they get to maximize their lease time because they're going to have kids coming at a time when other people wouldn't come. Let's say it's after school, so 3:30 to 4:30. And then you're going to have the 50 plus, which, or retirees, so, you know, 50, 60 plus, and they're going to come at different times where they wouldn't usually be generating membership sales off that space. And I'm like, okay, perfect. They're addressing both markets. They're maximizing their return for that space. Awesome. Everybody wins. But it didn't work. Like, they got rid of it because nobody came to Prodigy. Nobody came to whatever the other one was called. And it just didn't work. There's opportunities, but what do those people want? And this is when you start going back to it. Maybe aqua aerobics is it. Whether that's right to stop arthritis? No, osteoarthritis.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where you come in, because I'm a bro, and this is where smarter people come in.
I'm a bro as well. I'm a bro with a degree. That's it.
Yeah, you got a degree. I didn't even go to uni. I mean, unless it was for a university party. So this is, again, collaboration. I like to see the opportunities and solve the problems, but it takes people with a different intellect to be able to be a component of that as well. So I think that if you're investing in the future and you can find a way to really hit like the teens and kids, and it might not look like barbells and dumbbells or even in a gym, but it looks like something. No one's innovated that and turned it into a business model yet, as far as I'm concerned, unless you say sport. And then on the flip side, it's like, you know, the older population, how can you find an enticing solution which genuinely helps with common diseases and gets them into chronic diseases and gets them physically active more often? And I think if somebody can effectively solve those problems, then that's an innovation that should happen.
Yeah, 100% agree. There are two like demographics which are probably very important for society as a whole. I think if we get the kids in a good habit off the bat, that's going to be incredible for society. And if we get the older people, probably speaking derogatory towards old people right now, and I doubt they're listening. They won't know how to use their phone. But, you know, I think if
it's
we get...
It's selfish to say, but it's true, right?
Yeah. If we get them healthier, it's going to be, like, better for everyone.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, in America, it's done. Like they have, I know they have, it's like a plus 40s gym in California, a franchise. The founder of this was in my business networking group a couple of years ago, MPE. And I remember hearing all about, I thought it was fucking genius. Like it's incredible, especially in like really affluent areas. Like they are killing it. Southern California.
That's crazy. And Do you know the scary thing of that?
Yeah.
I'm almost in that bracket.
Well, you're a master's athlete now, aren't you?
Yeah, legit. Well, it depends which sport, but yeah, technically 35 points.
Yeah, I've seen you post about that a few times. I'm excited to get into that age group because it's less competitive. Most people just drop off. I'm like, I'm never dropping off.
I sort of have this window now. So whenever I've whenever I've won anything or like F45 playoffs and all of that, I haven't technically been great. I've just seen a window of opportunity where I know that I can win something or I can hack the system. Tim Ferriss used to do it. Yeah, so he had like world records in dancing, and it's not because he was great. It's because he found a way to hack the system. So I essentially did that, and that's how I've done a lot of the stuff. Not because I'm great, but I have this window of opportunity to break a lot of masters records before all the people who are great now in opens are starting to turn 35. So I'm like, all right, if I'm going to do it, this or 2023 is pretty much the last year that I have to be able to get my names etched in the record books.
Are we talking CrossFit?
No, this is weightlifting.
Weightlifting, nice.
And it's probably the last year before I jump on hormone therapy as well. So it really is that window of opportunity.
Mate, you're already jacked. I can't even imagine.
I'll just be balder.
Look, so... You know, we're both entrepreneurs. We're both business people as well as fitness people. And one of the things I really admire about you is you take risks. Taking risks is something that most people are adverse to, for obvious reasons, just the fear of complete financial meltdown or personal meltdown or what will people think of me. And you're someone that probably doesn't think about it in the same light. So, you know, what's some of the biggest risks you've taken and how do they pay off? The reason I ask you this is because I want people to be inspired listening to this. I want them to finish the podcast thinking, Brenda's got a plan. They talk some good shit. And I'm inspired to do something. So like, what are your biggest risks and how do they pay off for you?
Yeah, for sure. I'll give context to it as well. I used to be like so risk averse. I think that's the way of saying it, where I just didn't care. I'll just throw caution into the wind. If I wanted to do something, no matter what, I'd just make it happen. After I became a dad, that definitely changed a bit, where all of a sudden you got minimum requirements financially. Like, what's the worst thing if it's me? Like, I don't care. I'm going to make it work. I moved over to Perth with like, I think, like maybe less than a couple of $100 in my wallet, with no job, with nothing. I literally moved over and I'm like, yeah, we'll work out, and jumped on a plane and stayed at my mate's house. I'll come back to that because I'm actually going to use that as the one which paid off. I've done businesses where I'm like, hey, this is what I'm going to do, whether it's Perth Fit Fam. There's an opportunity. I've got some form of feedback that it's going to work, and I just quit my job and went full into it. Probably stupid, but it happened, and I did it. And I went through processes like that to be able to do it. Even Fitify got validation, got funding. I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop, and I'm going to put all my efforts into this. The biggest thing for me is, actually, I'll finish this off. I had a baby and sold my shares at this time, bagged some cash, was taken care of in that instance, but I became a dad. And I actually sat there and I worked out, what's the minimum amount I can earn to make sure that we have a roof over our heads, that we can eat, and that stuff's taken care of. And I had that number. And I going into business this time and leaving like a job, which I had after I sold the app, 3 months afterwards, I was like, okay, I'm a guy, I've got to work. It's, you know, you've got to have purpose. Mm. And I ended up going to work for someone else because I wasn't ready for business. When I was ready to get back into business and I had that itch and I knew what I was going to do, I literally was like, okay, what's the minimum figure that I need to earn to take care of my family? And I had that. And I made sure that I could do that before I left, which I could. Had I been younger, I wouldn't have cared. I just would have like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go do it and put all my energies into it and make it happen. The outcome of that, being younger and not being in the public service, which growing up in Canberra, that's what you do. That's what my family wanted me to do back then, is become a public servant, earning that average amount and hating my 9 to 5. I flew to the other side of the country. And I went, that's not what I want for my life. I want to go explore it. I was definitely the black sheep of the family. And like I said, I jumped on a plane with no job, no nothing, and then just started my own journey, working my life out at that point in time. The process of doing that is I got to do what I love. I found it early, which I'm lucky. I got to do what I loved. I tried things along the way for sure, but I took risks and I threw money into stuff and I didn't care if I lost the money. But I was just going to try, you know, try things. I worked it out after I sold the dating app and I banked some cash. And I actually said, you know what, if I would have saved a regular amount every week or whatever, and the compounding interest effect of that, I would literally be in the same situation, but I would hate my life.
Yeah.
Like, well, I might not hate it. I just might have become dull to doing something. And that was my life. I was going to work 9 to 5 in to make ends meet and then try and live outside of those hours. So I got to experience stuff. I got to film with Arnold. I get to go MC CrossFit things. I literally get to hang out with people that I love, and I've created situations doing what I love. And work for me, work and personal, it's now I've got a baby, it's separated for sure. But there was no line between the two because I was literally living my life, like doing business with people I wanted to, and I just made somehow a career of being me, and somehow that worked and I got to make money from it. So I think from a risk perspective and trying to put myself in somebody else's shoes, and depending where they are at life, if you're young, like if you're in your 20s and there's something you have and you have some level of validation that people want it, whether it's a product or a service, just go for it, hammer it, work out what the minimum amount is that you need to take care of yourself. Make sure that you can cover that. Well, I would suggest, because I never used to do that, I'll just risk it all. But, you know, I would say just understand what that number is, not the I'm going to earn $1 million a year and that's when I'm successful. Just what's that minimum success line to feed yourself and to put a roof over your head. And then just go from there and let it compound and become great at what you do and learn the lessons along the way. Because I can say, the experiences that I've had have all compounded and all helped. And building an app was like a 2-year university degree in tech and data analytics and startup science. It was wild. And the impact that has now had on not only in my business now and how we operate, but also the impact I have on other businesses is like astronomically different, because all of a sudden I've got like this different level of knowledge just from doing it. It's crazy.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. We went out to dinner with some close friends of ours last night, and they started a business about a year ago. It's not exactly killing it, and they were like a little bit upset about it. And I kind of said to them, look, I've been doing entrepreneurship or working for myself for 13 years. It's not about how much money you make or how successful it is. It's about the skills you learn. Because if it's not this one, it's the next one. And if it's not the next one, it's the one after. At some point, one of your like things or projects or businesses is going to take off, and it's about acquiring the skills in each, you know, season of your life, so to speak, so that when the big opportunity comes up, you're going to fucking crush and dominate.
And I think when you reach every one of those steps as well, because you always look back and you're always like, oh man, I wish that I knew you back then what I know now, or how I would have done that different. I still do that now, where like, I swear every few months I'm still like consuming and still learning so much that I'm like, oh, I would play that so different. And I'm 37 and it's not like I stop now. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to continually just get better and better and better and better at this. And the way that I'm going to do that, obviously you try and learn, you know, from other things or other people. But like, you know, I know that we spoke about being in groups, and I'm sure that, you know, we're both paid for different education, you know, non-tertiary education. But I literally learn the most now just by doing it and testing it.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. So, yeah, what would you think to, what would you say to someone that's, you know, on the cusp of taking risks or making a big decision which could adversely, positively affect their life or negatively?
Yeah, okay, cool. So if I had to tell anyone anything, I would say validate your idea before you jump. And if you have a product-based idea and you think that you've got the next big gadget or whatever this thing's going to be, and you're like, it's going to kill it, but like you have not got interest off anything, or you can't measure basic data like conversion rate, average order value, returning customer rate. So I'm talking from, that's probably more of a Shopify standpoint. I wouldn't completely drop my income now that I'm older. I wouldn't completely drop my income until I had those things, until I had some level of proof that I can scale it. I'd say take the risk in investing into this thing, like 100%. I don't care if it's, you know, whatever savings, whatever splurge accounts, whatever Mojo accounts you've got set up, if you're into barefoot style. But I would take the risk into invest it, establish validation. Once you've got your validation and you can prove scalability and just put in that extra hustle, then you can start to cut your other stuff. That's how I would take a, that's how I would say take the risk, but just make sure that you take care of the other stuff so you don't need to worry and make bad decisions based on finance. So that's if somebody like already, you know, they're ready to take that step. If we to scale it back and people are just too scared to do it, and I think this is probably the one that I should have led in with that will resonate. If you have this idea or you have this dream, but you're just too scared to do it, like fuck that. Like get rid of, that's the part that you need to get rid of. You may as well test it. What's the worst that's going to happen? And most fear would be, oh, what are people going to think? It's like, I remember, all right, so we did the dating app, right? Started off as a joke. I got so many messages, people thought I was an idiot. It's crazy. Like legit, I probably thought I was an idiot, but I was just so intent into like learning everything about this thing, this industry. Once I established, oh, people are actually interested in this, this is actually an idea, I went nuts in learning every single thing I could about the industry, the tech, how it works, the development. Like I already knew about startup and going through a lean startup process at that stage, but I actually got to implement it. Even when the app came out, we literally launched a minimum viable product, which was full of bugs, was broken. I started getting messages from people that I didn't know, but they knew me from the industry, like basically saying how shit it was and how it's never going to work. Guess what, motherfuckers? It worked.
Dude, I like, thought it was incredible.
It paid off.
Off the bat, I was like, this is incredible. What a fucking idea.
Yeah. It worked, but like I just had to take it and I was like, oh yeah. It's all like, that was all there. But you have to go through that stuff. Like, I mean, someone is definitely talking shit somewhere, but I don't know. I just don't even think about it. Like you just get it done. If it tickles my pickle and it's like, if it's something which I go, hey, that looks like fun. And like, I think that there's a, like, I've got some level of proof that there's a market for it. I like to operate in a blue ocean. So like something which is a new innovation. That's sort of like my space where I like to work. It's like creating something new. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, if I've got a level of proof and however I can measure that, whether it's through building a waiting list, whether it's through doing something on Instagram and see what the traction off that thing is, I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep on putting into this. So if you've got an idea, just do it. Just like find how to launch a minimum viable product. do it, or minimal viable service, whatever you want to call it, do it as much as you possibly, like as close as you possibly can and as fast as you possibly can. Work out what the engagement is on that to see what the market feedback is. And if you're getting market feedback, that might be for someone who's scared to, let's just say randomly, start a massage business just as a random thing. But you're doing this service on the side of what you're doing and you're building it up. Cool. Okay, you got validation. You love what you do. You're passionate. That's probably a bad example. I'm just trying to think of something non-product related. But get the validation, test it early, get the feedback. And then when you're good to go, just send it.
Just send it. That's the final send off there. Yeah, I'd like just to hammer your point, like people at 9.999% out of 10. No, so 9.9 out of 10 people that are talking shit generally are doing nothing. So like,
yeah,
you know, that's a rule of thumb. Finally, this is a spanner in the works. Our final question before we wrap this podcast up, which has been incredible. What's something I haven't asked you, but I should have?
Ha!
Yeah.
We used to hammer people with this all the time at the end of the Dad Bub podcast.
Payback.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, easy question. I don't even know. Something that you should have asked me, but you didn't. I was going to say it's completely personal and not industry related.
It's fun.
But it's fun. It's fun.
It's fine. Go there.
How much did I enjoy your wedding?
Oh, yeah. How much did you enjoy my wedding? Summarize it for us.
I got to say, this was like the best surprise because I was my wife's plus one. So there's actually multiple connections with Tim and I. I was my wife's plus one. Went down south. I'm going to blame it on my wife. Forgot to pack my pants. Had to race and get like this random get up in Dunsborough, which is just surf shops. Rocked up. I got to say, the best MC, best marriage celebrant I've ever seen in my life. Absolute comedy show. Yeah. And the reception was one of the funnest things. So, yeah, thank you for having me for that. It was literally, I'd probably say, the top wedding I've ever been to as far as vibe. Fun times, good crew. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was an incredible day. Best day of my life, hands down. It's funny, like our MC, Daniel Delby, he's gone like viral from the videos from our wedding. Yeah, he's on TikTok. He's getting like 700,000 views on some of them, which is pretty crazy.
So he should. Yeah. He was the best. Literally, I was like, Shell and I just both went, man, I wish that we knew about this MC for our wedding because he was the best.
Yeah, I'll tell the story of how we were at one of my clients' weddings and this MC was up there and I was like, oh, that guy looks familiar. And then all of a sudden he started paying out on people in the audience and no one was laughing. And I was hysterical. Like I was the only person laughing at the, like when people were like up on the altar getting married, I was killing myself laughing, couldn't contain myself. And I looked around and I don't think he told everyone that he was a comedian. And I was just like, this is the best thing of all time. And then I looked at Steph and I was like, we have to have this guy do our wedding.
Yeah, it was a good choice. I don't know how people wouldn't know he was a comedian, but I can just imagine like if you got a real serious family and what was coming to be out of his mouth, he was solid.
Yeah, he was great. So, Brendo, how do people find you? And thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, so probably Instagram. So just Brendo McCormack. Or if you just type Brendo, it's definitely going to pop up, especially if you're in Perth. If you want to find out a little bit about more what we do, so Perth Fit Fam, if you don't follow it already, just go to Perth Fit Fam on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, whatever that is. And if there's something like you got questions, just feel free to like reach out and shoot me questions. And yeah, man, thanks for having me on.
Looks like we need to organize a public holiday for Perth Fitness Day.
Let's do it. We got some follow-ups.
Thanks, brother.